Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. The East-West war of words grows ever louder following Russia's annexation of the Ukrainian region of Crimea. Let's learn what Americans make of it with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Do folks think we're heading back to a new Cold War?
Yeah, half do. 50% do. We found a question we had asked back in 1991, just after the Soviet Union broke up and the Cold War was supposedly over. And back then, about 25% of Americans said, yes, we're heading back to a Cold War. We just re-asked the question. Now 50% of Americans say we are heading back to a Cold War with Russia.
Frank, I'm wondering what percent of those who think we're returning to a Cold War weren't even alive when the first Cold War took place.
Well, that's an excellent question. Those 18 to 29 certainly weren't alive and didn't know what was going on, and they're much less likely to be worried or think that we're going back to a Cold War, maybe because they don't know what it is. Although we looked carefully, it wasn't that they said they didn't know. 18 to 29s, and to some degree those who are somewhat older, said, we just don't think we're going back to a Cold War. But boy, you look at those 65-plus, and those Americans, of course, very cognizant of what the Cold War was. They're the ones that are overwhelmingly most concerned that we may be going back. And also Republicans. This is very political. Republicans much more scared, I guess I would use that word, or at least more think that it's more likely we're going to go back to a Cold War than either independents or Democrats.
Let's look at Russia's image.
Is it our enemy or just an unfriendly country? That's what we've been trending over time. The percent who say Russia is now an enemy has jumped up to 24%. That was 16% last September. So clearly it's moving in that direction, although that's just a quarter of Americans. Well over 40% say, for example, Iran is the U.S. enemy, so Russia's not in that territory yet. But clearly a big change from last September. Now the majority of Americans, in fact, two-thirds say Russia's either an enemy or unfriendly. 5% say it's an ally and 21% say friendly. But those positive views of Russia, which were at 44% last fall, are now down to just about a quarter of Americans. So the events that are unfolding over in Ukraine at the moment clearly have had a negative impact on Americans' view of Russia.
Are Putin's ratings specifically falling as fast as those of the country he leads?
They're already pretty low. He was down into the teens on his favorable rating last time we measured him a few months ago. Now 9% favorable, 69% unfavorable image.
Was it ever positive?
Yes, it was. If you go back to 2002-03, Americans were very positive about both Putin and Russia. And he had a net positive rating at that time among the American public. Those were the good old days as far as he was concerned. But since he's come back into the limelight more recently, last year and this year, his ratings have been more negative and, as mentioned, now the most negative we've ever rated for the Russian president.
Is the situation in Ukraine the top concern of Americans regarding overseas developments?
We ask Americans how closely they're following that situation and, Dave, the Malaysian flight 370, the disappearance of that plane, that tragedy. You know, and that's important because there's been a lot of discussion about whether or not, say, cable news channels are over-covering the tragedy with the Malaysian plane, given everything else that's happening in the world. Well, the American public's following that more closely than the events with Ukraine and Russia, 73% closely following the Malaysian plane disappearance, well above the average for stories that we rate. 61% say they're following the story about Russia and Ukraine and Crimea, and that's about average. So of the two, Americans are paying more attention to the Malaysian plane disappearance.
There's a deadline coming up, and that's for enrollment in the Affordable Care Act. Is that of concern and or interest to Americans?
Well, it certainly is of some interest. Health in general is not the top problem facing the country. That is clearly the economy, but it is up there usually in the top five. The Health Care Act itself still has a more negative than favorable image as it's tidying up here. Just a new Kaiser Family Foundation poll. They do a poll every month on this, and they found a little more positive attitudes towards the Health Care Act in the poll that just came out, although still net negative. We have found one impact of the enrollment period, and that is the percent of Americans who are uninsured looks like it has been coming down. We reported the results for January and February. Now I'm just looking internally at the data here for March. Of course, the month's not over yet, but the rate of uninsured Americans is down even further in March, it looks like. So one of the objectives of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, was to lower the rate of the uninsured, and it looks like at least marginally that's happening.
Presumably, there's a positive correlation between health and well-being. Let's define well-being, and I understand we can go to various cities to see how it plays out.
Ah, yes. This week we released our Gallup HealthWays well-being indices for all of the major metropolitan areas across the country. Well-being is a summary of six different areas of life, including health and emotion and how you evaluate your life, whether you smoke or not, whether you even like your work. We ask all those questions every night, and then we put them together and look at them by metropolitan area. And we were able to say that Provo, Utah's residents have the highest well-being of any metropolitan area in the country, followed closely behind by Boulder, Colorado. And the worst is Huntington, Ashland, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Ohio. USA Today, actually, Dave, interviewed the mayor of Huntington this week and said, what's going on with your low well-being? And he was a little defensive, but he said, well, we're working on it. We're trying to get our citizens to be a little better off. Part of the problem in Kentucky and West Virginia is that such a high percent of the residents there smoke. And smoking is one of the key components of our well-being index. And unfortunately, that's not good for the residents in that area.
If the mayor of Huntington were in turn to call the mayor of Provo, what would he learn?
Well, what happens in Provo is that a lot of the residents don't smoke. For one thing, they're very healthy, they're outdoors, and they evaluate their life very positively out there, which is a big part of this as well. They like their work. Emotionally, they express more happiness every day than anger, and all of that comes out to give them a very high well-being. Same thing for Boulder. Very good physical ratings in Boulder, and also people evaluate their life very positively there as well.
Take us back to the Philadelphia region.
Right at average, 66.2 is the average well-being score for the country. And guess what? Philadelphia, Camden, Wilmington, which is the greater metropolitan area, 66.2. So Philadelphia is neither better nor worse than average. It's right at the average. You may ask, how's that compared to other big cities? New York, about 66, about the same. Washington's actually higher, if you want to go down a little further south, at 70. And Boston's higher, up there with the 69 score. But of the cities that are closest on the I-95 corridor to Philadelphia, New York, and then Baltimore to the south, all at about 66, which is about the national average. So Philadelphia's well-being, right at average.
Is there much year-to-year fluidity in these ratings?
Not a lot. Huntington, unfortunately, for those residents, have been near the bottom or at the bottom for year after year. And Boulder has traditionally been number one, but as I mentioned, this year was barely outdistanced by Provo, but it's been up at the top as well. So generally speaking, the cities that score high on well-being continued to do so year after year.
We have a moment left. Let's tiptoe into politics, specifically correlation between age and party identification.
Dave, we looked at that in depth this week. One of my colleagues spent a lot of time looking at it. And right now, as you may know, seniors are significantly more likely to be Republican than young people 18 to 29. And some of us would say, well, that's the way it's always been. Young people always tend to be more liberal and Democratic, but not so. Actually, prior to the last decade, it was a flip. If you go back to 1992, seniors, for example, were significantly more Democratic than young people. And it basically stayed that way up until about 2007, 2008, about the time Obama was coming onto the scene. So there's really been a realignment here where our pattern that we find now with the older Americans skewing Republican and younger Democratic, not necessarily what we would have found a decade or two ago. Some fascinating reasons for this, attitude change and also race. Seniors are overwhelmingly white, and whites tend to be more Republican. But now for 18 to 29s in this country, based on our data, we're almost getting half who are identified as non-white, something other than white. And, of course, being non-white is highly correlated with being Democratic. So part of all of this is intertwined with other factors.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.